We're holding on Mem Gimel Amud Beis by the Mishnah at the bottom of the Amud. Mishnah says, "Hachoshev b'shloach yad b'pikadon." If a person thinks to do shlichus yad in a pikadon, so again, as we've learned before, shlichus yad means that he's misusing the pikadon for his own purposes, and now he becomes chayiv and everything for it, including onsin. Rashi says that it means that he said in front of Edim that I'm going to take this pikadon for myself. So Tosfos also points out that based on what we're going to learn in the Gemara, that in fact we are even though it says achoshev, we're talking about speaking, and Tosfos compares it to actually the matter of pigul, where also we have all over the expression is a person thinks a thought of pigul, but in quite a number of places Tosfos says that actually it doesn't mean thinking it; it means speaking it. That not everybody agrees to that. First of all, Rashi himself actually mentions elsewhere, Argos Habach points out that Rashi himself in Kiddushin says that it can include thinking as well, not just speaking, unlike here where he's saying it means speaking. And as far as Pigul as well, actually the truth is there is discussion between Rashi and Tosfos elsewhere. We'll learn about it when we get to say to Kodshim Bez Hashem, whether in fact Pigul requires speaking or whether it is enough to think about it. As far as the fact that Rashi mentions Edim over here, it's not really that without Edim it wouldn't be effective, but practically speaking, Achronim point out, if there's no Edim, then there's not going to be any way of proving that he said it, and therefore how can you be Mechayev him? And I guess the same question could be asked according to on Rashi saying in Kedushin that it means that if he thinks it, if he only thinks it, then how do we know that he actually ever did it? Pashtos, we would have to say that means he thought about it, and then later on, he actually used it. And then maybe later on, he tells somebody that, you know what, I actually did that. Whatever the case, there are also Mephoshim who point out that given that the whole matter of Shlichus Yad is a Knas, then we can say a Knas requires Edim. In any case, so he thought or said to do it, but he didn't actually do it yet. Beshama says he's going to be Chayev already at that point for the consequences of Shlichus Yad. Or Bishilom, any chayiv at sheyushlach by yad. Bishilom says only when he actually uses it. Shenema imloy shalach yodiv imlachas reyuk. Since after all, the pasuk says that he has to swear that he did not stretch forth his hand against the property of his fellow yid, implying that he actually has to stretch forth his hand and actually do it. Until that point, Bishilom says that he's not chayiv. We touched on that yesterday. We talked about whether it's that Bishama and Basil disagree on the question of Shlichus Yad Tzrichu Chisorin or not. Is it that Bishama holds that Shlichus Yad Ein Tzrichu Chisorin, that it doesn't matter whether anything's lacking from it or not, he can still be Chayev for Shlichus Yad, and Basil would disagree with that? Or is it they both agree that Shlichus Yad Ein Tzrichu Chisorin? But does there at least have to be that he did some kind of action? In many places in Shas, by the way, we find that Bis Shammai tends to go according to the potential of something, and Bis Hillel according to the actuality of it. Classic example being when it comes to Neres Hanukkah, where Bis Shammai says you light from 8 going down to 1, because the 8, one way of looking at it, is that at the beginning of Hanukkah, you have 8 potential days to come. The second day, you have 7 potential days to come, and so forth, and therefore you light like that, whereas Bishilul goes according to the actual number of days. There's many examples of it throughout Shas. There's a couple of sichas where that ever points out, where that ever makes that point. So here also, Bis Shama is going according to the potential, and Bishilul is going according to the actuality. Okay, continues the Mishnah. Hites a chavis, suppose that there was a barrel of wine that was the pikadin. Now, suppose he tilted it, intended to pour out wine from it for himself, to do shlichus yad with it. The notl him and revius, and he took a revius of wine out of the barrel. The nishbra, and the barrel broke later on. Edim ashalom el revius, he has to pay only a revius because he hasn't done any kinyan, he hasn't done any maisa kinyan on this barrel. By tilting it, he didn't lift it up, he didn't move it or anything like that. Therefore, he hasn't made a maisa kinyan on the rest of the barrel. So the revius that he used, he can be chayev for, but not the rest. Higbia, on the other hand, if he lifted up the barrel, the notalemian revius, and then took a revius out of it, the nishbara, and then it broke later on, mashalom dmei kula, then he's paying for the value of the entire thing because he was koneh with that hagba. So the Gemara starts off, menahanimili. let's deal with the machlokas b'shama b'shilol, that b'shama is saying that it's enough for him to have machshava, and again, whether the machshava means just thinking in his mind or whether it means speaking, where is b'shama getting that from? So like this, the Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a brisa, when the pasuk says, I'll call dvar pesha, the pasuk says for any matter of carelessness, of pshia, and the word dvar also means speaking, also means a word. So b'shama omim, malam chachayev al machshava, k'maisa. So b'shama says, you see from that, that he's chayev for machshava, so here's where Tosfos points out that you see that we don't mean actual machshava, we mean dibur, because he's darshiting from the word dvar. Anyway, b'shama says, you see from that, that that's tantamount to maisa, and therefore that he can already be chayev for that. Whereas Basilulad said only until he actually does Shlichos Yad as he chayev, Shanema, as it says in the Pasuk, because we learned in the Mishnah, in the Shalach Yadoi Bimlachas Re'ehu, where the Pasuk says if he did that he's chayev, that he can swear and be potter if he didn't stretch forth his hand against the other guy's property, implying that if he stretched forth his hand, he actually committed Shlichos Yad, only then is he chayev in Unsin. So now the Braisa continues. Okay, the Bishamay says, what are you doing with the, what are you, Bishil, doing with the Pasuk al Kol Dvar Pesha? Fine, we have the same question on you. What are you doing with the words Imlay Shalach Yadai, which implies that there has to be actual Shlichus Yad? Ela, so Bishil says, Imkain Matam Lema al Kol Dvar Pesha. So what are we doing with the words al Kol Dvar Pesha? We're not learning from it. The concept of that machshava is enough to be machayevim. Rather, Basila would say we learn from it the following din. She yochol emli ella omer la'avdei l'shluchoi. She yochol emli ella hu. If you didn't have the words al kol dvar pesha, you would think maybe only if he personally does the shlichos yad, that's when he would be chayev. And how would we know that the same din also applies if he told his Eved or he told his Shliach to commit the Shlichos Yad? So how would we know that he's also Chayev? Talmud Loima, I'll call Dvar Pesha. Therefore, the Pasuk says, I'll call Dvar Pesha. So in other words, Basil is saying, this is one of those cases where even though usually Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira, this would be an exception to the rule, and we would say that the Meshaleach is Chayev. So therefore, Basilil says that's what we're learning from our Kol Dvar Pesha, not like Yubis Shamaya saying that we learn from that a person can be chayev only based on a thought or on a word without actually doing it. Now, Bis Shamaya does not explain what they do with Basilil's pasuk imlay shalach yad b'malachas re'ehu. I mean, balabatish, we could say that they're saying he has to swear that he hasn't that there hasn't been any shlichus yad involved, including in thought. There are details within this. The Smeh points out that the Smeh argues that only it would have to be in order for the Meshaleach to be chayev over here. It would have to be that the Shliach didn't know that it's a pikadin, or it would have to be that he doesn't have what to pay. Otherwise, the Smeh says we would apply the usual rule of Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveir. And then they discuss that. So why when we say yes shliach l'dvar aveira, it doesn't matter whether the shliach knows or not. The shach actually brings interestingly from his father. The shach's father was a distinguished Talmud Chacham as well, not of the caliber of his son maybe, but the shach does quote him in a number of places in his Pirushim, and he gives an answer of what the smeh was thinking, that the pasuk is coming to be marbe a case, so it's coming to tell us that there's a case where otherwise you would say he's potter, and nevertheless we're saying he's chayev, but still why wouldn't we say that both of them are chayev? So therefore it must be that we're talking about that. Therefore it must be talking about where the shliach didn't know. So therefore Sibisil says that's what we learned from our Kol Dvar Pesha. Next, the Mishnah said Hita Esachol V'Schola. We said we have the case where he tilted the barrel and poured off some wine from it versus where he picked up the barrel and poured the wine out of it. Where we said in the first case he's chayev and onsin only for that revius, and in the sefer he's chayev and onsin for the entire barrel. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabba, lo shonu ela shenishbar, ela nishbara. The Mishnah is talking about only when it broke. But if after he took out that revius, the rest of it went sour, mishalamas kula, then regardless, he's going to be paying the whole thing. My time a giri dide huda hanula, because we can say his arrows are what caused it. Meaning, in other words, it's normal when a barrel is not completely full, it's more likely for it to spoil, for the contents of it to spoil. So therefore, if he had left that revius in there, it's less likely the rest of it would have spoiled. Therefore, it would be an onus, and he'd be potter as a shema chinam or as a shema sachar. But here, where he took out that revius, that makes it more likely for the rest of it to spoil, and therefore therefore for him to be chayev, even though he didn't do meshicha or hagbar or anything, and the rest of it, he can still be chayev because he was directly mazik it b'yadayim. So in that case, there's a few blocks earlier discussed that in that case, the same din, that din might apply only to wine or things like that. We're taking out one revius affects the whole rest of it. When you're talking about, if let's say it was a barrel of oil or a barrel of figs or something like that, not necessarily would that din apply because, again, you can't say the rest of them spoiled because of taking out one revius or a few figs or whatever, because it doesn't work that way. Then we said in the Mishnah, "Biyav natal hemenachola." Then we said that if he lifted up the barrel and took out the revius, then he's chayev for the whole thing. So Omar Shmuel loy natal mamish. So Shmuel says it doesn't actually have to mean that he actually took the revius. At a kivin sheik be a little once he picked it up in order to take the revius. Af bishalay natal, even though he didn't take it yet, then already he's chayev for the whole thing. Now this does not this has nothing to do with the machlokas b'shama b'shilo, because at least he did a maise. Even b'shilo agrees that once he did a maise, he can be chayev. But it does go does have to do with the question that we've been discussing, whether shlichos yad tzricha chisarin or not. So leima kasavah Shmuel shlichos yad ain't tzricha chisarin. Does that mean that Shmuel holds that shlichos yad does not require chisarin, and therefore that he can be chayev even though nothing is actually missing from it yet? Which we've discussed the last couple of blot, whether that's the case. Amri, so the answer, loy, not necessarily. You could say that usually shlichus yad tzricha chisarin, but shiny hocha, you could argue over here, when he picks it up to take the revius, denichaleit to heavy hachobis kula bosis laha revius. He figures, let the whole rest of the barrel be a bosis and help protect that revius. In other words, again, we have the opposite of what we were just saying. We were just saying that if you take out a revius of wine from the barrel, it's more likely that the rest of it is going to spoil. Well, the other way around also, when he picks it up, intending to be koina, a revius of it for himself, So he may figure, you know what, I do want that revius, but I don't want to take it out right now because I don't need it right now. I only need it later on. And meanwhile, it's going to spoil. So let it stay together with the rest of the barrel until I feel like taking it. So therefore, in effect, it actually says he becomes a shoyl on the rest of the contents of the barrel. The revius itself would be a matter of shlichus yad, and he becomes a gazlan for that. The rest of it, he would become a shoyl, and therefore he would be chayev. So therefore, he'd be chayev and oinsin on the entire thing. So usually we would say shlichus yad tzricha chisarin, but in this case, he's in effect saying that I'm becoming a shoyl on most of it and a gazlan on a revius of it. So boy Rav Ashi. So in that case, Rav Ashi asked the question, he be aunaki little him in a dinner. What would be in a similar case? Suppose that it was a purse full of money that he picked it up intending to take one dinner from it, and he didn't end up taking the dinner. What would be the din? According to Shmuel, would he be chayev on the grounds of shlichus yad? Mahu, what would be the din? Would we say chamrahu de la minter ela agav chamra? Wine is protected only together with other wine. Again, if you take out the revius and put it separately, it's more likely to spoil. Abel zuza minter. But you could say in the case of coins, it's not like that. One coin does not necessarily require the rest of them to be with it. So you can't say he's making the rest of the bag a bosses for that coin. We can't say that he became a shoyl on the rest of the coins. On the other hand, you could argue that no, not really. It's true that the coins are not going to spoil when they're individually, unlike wine. On the other hand, the fact is you guard an arniki when you have a purse full of money, you guard it much differently than one individual coin. One individual coin may easily get lost. A whole purse is much less likely to. So therefore, you could argue that maybe in a sense he is borrowing the entire purse to serve as a bosses for this coin. The Gemara says, Teku, we have to leave it on, with it's left unresolved, and therefore, as would usually be the case, in other words, therefore, we can't be mechayev him. We can't be mechayev him on shlichus yad, because we don't know in fact whether he is chayev or not. In fact, so when the Rambam brings this halacha over here in the Rambam brings over here this halacha in Hilchos Gzeila, in Hilchos Gzeila Vaaveda, so he says on it, let's see. So he says here the Rambam says on it that I can't find it right now. The Rambam says on it that he's chayiv that when it comes to when it comes to a barrel, then he's chayiv for the entire thing. When it comes to a money bag, he says that it's a suffix, whether he's chayiv on the whole bag or only the one dinar. And the Ravid actually has a whole different din. The fact is, he didn't even take out the revius yet. How can he be chayev in the whole thing? The Ravid actually learns the whole sugya differently. He says that the Ravid learns this entire sugya differently. He says the vort is that if he actually took the revius, is he chayev for the whole rest of the thing? So we're saying that you could say maybe he took it originally intending to take the entire thing, and then he takes out only the revius. Is he chayev for only that revius or not? So Shmuel is saying that even though he didn't take out the rest of the wine, he can still be chayev for the rest of it, because once he actually takes out the revius, then the rest of it is more likely to spoil. So now the question would be about as far as a purse. But the Ravid learns that shlichos yad tzricha chisarim. So he says therefore that if he didn't end up taking out the revius, even Shmuel would agree that he's not chayev yet, because no chisaron. And the same way, if he didn't take out the one coin yet, then he wouldn't be chayev yet. So that's the Ravid learns that we have to follow the opinion that shlichus yad tzricha chisaron, as opposed to according to the Rambam, we're saying that shlichus yad ain't tzricha chisaron. Okay, hadran alocha mafkid. This next perek over here, perek hazahav, is going to start dealing with the dinim of kinyon.
So one second, what's the halacha? Yes,
the halacha is you have a machlokas of the Rambam and the Ravid on that point of whether shlichus yad tzricha chisaron or not. So as usual, when there's machlokas rishonim, we don't really have a way of resolving it one way or the other. So in general, when it comes to dinim mamonos, you have a concept called kimli, that a person can say when there's a claim against him, I hold like such and such an opinion in halacha, and therefore that if you want to collect money from me, then you have to demonstrate that I'm actually chayev. And since we have machlokas rishonim, you don't necessarily have the ability to do that.
That sounds absurd to me. That a person can say, "I choose the halacha." It sounds absurd.
It's what it is, because hamotzi mechaver l'varaya. You want to prove that I'm chayev to pay. You have to prove that the halacha is like that opinion. The truth is actually, in this case, the mechaber does paskin over here in Shulchan Aruch, like the just straight like the Rambam, that in fact it's just the Rambam says it's just a suffix whether he's chayev or not. So in fact, the Mechaber brings just the Rambam, the Magen Mishnah over there on the Rambam, for the Rambam. So therefore, the Mechaber doesn't pay attention to what the Ravid is saying. So in this particular case, we would say b'pashtos that the halacha is not like the Ravid. The halacha would be like the Rambam. That in fact, in a case like that, there would be a suffix whether he's chayev, which the result of there being a suffix would be, in other words, that uh, that if if the other guy takes the money, tofas in mitzvah miyadei, but otherwise we can't. Otherwise we can't be mechayev him because of the suffix, as opposed to, again, according to the Ravid, there wouldn't even be a suffix in the first place, because according to him, shlichus yad tzricha chisorin, and without chisorin, there's nothing to talk about. But the Shulchan Aruch does not paskin like him, rather paskin like the Rambam.
Why don't we take, in this case, just the majority of opinions?
Well, that's essentially what we're doing. We have the Rambam versus the Ravid or Yechidim, and then you have the Mechaber, the Magid Mishnah and the Rambam over there, infers the Rambam, and explains how his Shitta can be made to work and to deflect the Ravid's objection, and the later, and the Mechaber, when he comes to write the Shulchan Aruch, he in turn follows that and passes like the Rambam.
So we have the Mechaber, we have the Rambam, and we have the Ravid. So which one?
So that's what I'm saying. It depends. So there's no hard and fast rule when it comes to paskin and such things. In this particular case, we have the Mechaber paskin like the Rambam, and that would mean that shlichus yad ain't a tzricha chisarin, and therefore that just the fact that he picked up the barrel intending to take wine from it would already be mechayev him for the whole thing, as opposed to according to the Ravid, it would not. So yes, the Shulchan Aruch paskin like the Rambam, and that nevertheless you could conceivably have. Maybe a shomer would be able to say Kim Lee, that I hold like the Ravid, and if you want to collect from me, then you'd have to prove the halacha is not like him. Whether he could say Kim Lee in a case like this, I don't know.
Well, there's two opinions out of three. You've proved it, haven't you?
Not necessarily, because the Mechaber follows the Rambam in that, and then those are two opinions. It's true, but that doesn't mean necessarily that the Ravid's opinion is completely rejected, because not like they ever actually voted on it. If they were all together and voted on it, that would be different. All right. Anyway, we need to move on. So let's go. Okay. This next Perek HaZahav deals with matters of kinyan. Now, we have like this. We know that there are various kinds of kinyan. We learned about a lot of them in Kiddushin. In particular, one kind of kinyan is called kinyan chalifin. So you have, I have an item, you have a different item, we trade one for another. So then, once I do meshicha on one item, then you're koina the other one, automatically, even if it's not physically present over here. So the first part of our parak is going to be dealing with matters of kinyan. Now, we have an issue that when it comes to coins, the Gemara is going to explain for us, is going to explain what our Mishnah is going to say, that matbeya ain't a nikna b'chalifin. You cannot acquire coins by means of kinyan chalifin. You need a different kind of kinyan for that. So now, therefore, our Mishnah is going to begin with discussing the case. If you're exchanging one kind of coin for another, then what creates the kinyan? So the Mishnah starts off, hazahav koina es hakesef. Gold acquires silver, meaning I have a certain number of gold coins. I want to exchange them for a certain number of your silver coins. At the rate, usually it would be, usually it was 24 silver dinar for one gold dinar, for example. We'll see about that in the Gemara. So the question is, which one of them, we have to consider which one is considered the money and which one is considered the commodity, which the Gemara is going to call payers, the produce. The rule being, again, exchanging money when it comes to metalflin does not create a kinyan. When it comes to karka and avodim, we learned in Kiddushin that yes, then kesef is one of the valid ways of making a kinyan. But when it comes to metalflin, kesef is not a valid way of making a kinyan, as we'll see in the Gemara in a few days why that's so. So the question is, which one is considered the money and which one is considered the commodity in terms of kinyanim? So hazahav koines hakesef, meaning, in other words, so Reuven and Shimon are trading, and Reuven gives Shimon the gold dinarim, and Shimon does some kind of kinyan on them, such as meshicha or agbah or what have you. At that point, the deal is done, and he has to give Reuven the silver coins. He can't change his mind. But vakesef ain't a koines hazahav. But silver does not acquire gold in the sense the other way around. That if Reuven had given the silver, then Shimon Shimon should follow through with the gold, obviously. But if Shimon changes his mind and says, you know what, I don't want to buy, I don't want to make the exchange after all, he would legally be able to change his mind. And so either one could change their mind, actually, because the silver is considered mois, it's considered money. So therefore, it doesn't accomplish a kinyan of metal. So we'll see in the Gemara eventually on Daf Mem Zayin. We're going to talk about why it is that Kesef is not Kona, why Kesef is not was not Kona, whether that's not Torah or Midrabanon. We'll see about that there. Similarly, the Mishnah continues, Hanachoshes Kona as a Kesef, that Kesef ain't a Kona as Hanachoshes. The same relationship you have between silver and copper, where the silver, the copper acquires the silver. Again, the copper is considered to be the commodity and the silver is considered to be the money. So therefore, once Mashiach has been done on the commodity, on the peiros, which is the copper coins, then at that point he's coined them and now the other one has the requirement to give him the silver. But silver does not acquire copper for the same reason. The silver is considered money relative, silver coins are considered money relative to the copper. Similarly, the Mishnah continues, Mois harois koina sayafos. Bad coins, meaning in other words, so if you have coins that have been disqualified to use anymore for currency. So here they can't circulate anymore. And Tosfos says actually it doesn't necessarily have to be that there's two kinds of ways in which coins can be possible to use. It's called psalte malchus, where the government officially withdrew them from circulation, versus psalato medina, where people don't want to use them anymore. And then you also have Tosfos says over here anyway, Mois Harois doesn't necessarily mean they're completely unusable because of one or the other of these factors. It can mean maybe that they do circulate, but only with difficulty. Most people won't want to accept them. Anyway, so those are not considered money anymore for this purpose. Those are considered the commodity, koinus asayafis. So therefore, when he does meshicha or whatever form of kinyan on those, then he's koinu the good ones, asayafis, the good ones that he's giving him in exchange, by yafis and koinu asarois, but the good ones don't acquire the bad ones for the same reason, because the exchange of money doesn't constitute a kinyan. Continues the Mishnah, asimon koinu asamatbeya, and asimon acquires a coin. Rashi explains that an asimon is a blank, is a metal blank that's going to be used for striking a coin, but has not actually been used yet. Right now it's just a flat planchet of metal. Tosfos actually disagrees with that and says that an asimon is also, it has some kind of design on it, but it's also something that doesn't really circulate well. In modern Hebrew, they used to hear that people a generation ago in Eretz Yisrael, they used to have phone tokens. They called them asimonim, coming from our Gemara over here. But those actually had a design on them, of course, so that would fit better with Tosfos's definition. But according to Rashi, it means that it has no design on it at all. Anyway, so that kona samatbeya, that if you give that in exchange, that acquires the matbeya. Again, the same idea. Once he did mashicha on the asimon, then the other guy is required to give him the equivalent amount of money and can't renege on the deal. Matbeya, in a kona asimon, the coin cannot acquire the asimon for the same reason. And the general rule, matalplin kona asamatbeya, matbeya in a kona asamatalplin. When there's mashicha, or any form of kinyan that's been accomplished on metalplin, then that acquires the coins, meaning that now the other person is required to pay him the money, and neither one can back out of the deal. Matveya in a kinyan on metalplin, but giving the money does not acquire the metalplin, because again, that's a kinyan kesef, does not work for metalplin. Zehaklal, the general rule is kol metalplin koinim zeh, all metalplin acquire one another, meaning, in other words, you can have. And Rashi points out, means that when it comes to metalplin against metalplin, till now we've been talking about coins against metalplin, and those have the rule that we just said. When it comes to metalplin against metalplin, then you have two possible ways. It can be kinyan chalifin. So like, for example, machlif pora b'chamer, I'm trading my cow for your donkey. So as soon as you do mashicha on the cow, automatically I've acquired the donkey. Or it can be betoras damim, where we figure out the actual monetary value of each one of them, and one does Meshicha on the other one, then also, and then one does Meshicha on one of them, then automatically that acquires it for the other one. So that also works. As opposed to when there's actual coins involved, where there we say that coins do not accomplish a king. So the Mishnah says, Ketzad, what does all this mean? What are examples of all of this? Moshe Chemenu Peris, if the Lekeach did Meshicha on the Peris, on the fruit or commodity or whatever, the Loi Nosan Loi Mois, and the other guy had not paid him the money yet, any Yochalachzeboi, neither one can back out of the deal at that point, because at that point the kinyan has already been done on the metalplin, and therefore the entire deal is considered to be done. But if he gave him coins and did not yet do mashicha on the peris, then either one of them can change their mind, because again, no kinyan has been accomplished yet, because the exchange of money does not accomplish a kinyan. Aval Omru, but the Chachamim said, even though it's true that legally you're allowed to do that because there's no kinyan yet, but a person who acts that way as is not doing properly, that I'm phrases it, loy also kamaisi Yisrael, he hasn't acted the way a yid should act. So therefore, so the Chachamim said, Misha Para, Hashem who punished, me anshe dera mabul, Hashem who took, who exacted punishment from the people of the mabul, umidera flogger, and from the people of the Dor HaFloga who built the tower of Babel, who also Lipora, the Gemara later on when it brings this Mishnah, it's going to bring a Bryce on it that mentions a couple of other examples, who also Lipora, Mimisha in Omid B'dibura, Hashem will pay back, Hashem will punish somebody who does not keep his word. Later on, we're going to learn in the Gemara, is that the Mishnah is saying you should know a person who does that is not acting like a yid and deserves to be punished by Hashem? Or does it mean that Beis Din actually takes that in Beis Din itself, they actually make this declaration to him and they make him accept on himself that he's ready to accept that curse on himself if he wants to renege on the deal? So this is the famous Misha Parah that we're going to learn about throughout this perek, and that's mentioned in other places in Shas, where if a person reneges on his deal, where he's allowed to api alocha, but he still shouldn't do that. Namely, in this case, where the money changed hands, but the commodity didn't, then he has to then there's this curse of Misha Parah involved. An interesting sicha actually, where the Rebbe talks about the deeper idea behind this. Meshicha represents our avoda milamata lamaila, where we're drawing things closer to Elikos. Mois, which is money, represents ashpa milamaila, where Hashem is bestowing on us. So we're saying when there's been only the sarusa de la'ela, the money, and not yet the meshicha, you haven't reciprocated, then it means, you know, the thing hasn't been accomplished yet. The purpose of avodah is that the way that avodah is effective is when you do your part from below. So we tell the person, listen, you're living in a gashmiistic world after all. You have to do your part. You can't expect everything to come from Hashem. But we're going to mention to you davka cases involving goyim. After all, why do we mention in Mishapara? Why are we mentioning only cases of the mabul on the Dor HaFloga before there was even a Jewish people? The Mishnah is going to add also the people that the Braisa, rather, in the Gemara is going to add also the people of Sdoim and Mitzriim. So why are we mentioning only those cases? The Rebbe talks about the deeper idea behind it is that we're telling him, look, you're a yid. In principle, we shouldn't even need to be telling you this. It should be enough that Hashem is being mashpia melamayla, and that's good enough. But the fact is, you live in a gashmiistic world, in a world where there is klippus, and therefore you have to do your part, and therefore we're going to tell you misha para, not in order to curse you, but fakir, to motivate you to live up to your responsibilities and to actually accomplish your mashicha. The Teferis Yisrael is an interesting explanation of why we mentioned Dafka these four. So he says that in general you could distinguish four different reasons why a person does Averis, because he has Gashmiastika Tivus, because he's looking for covered, because he wants money, or because he denies Hashem. So each of these four that we're mentioning over here, the Dirt on Marble, were the Dora Mabel were into Gezel in order. It's true they were into Gezel, but their main thing was they were terribly involved in their gashmiistic ataivus, as we know about Noisa Odom and whatever. Then you have the Anshe Dora Flogger, the Nasal on shame. We want a name for ourselves. We want to become famous. So that's the looking for covered. And then the people of Sdoim were greedy for money, and Pare and his Mitzriim were Mi Hashem. They're saying who is Hashem that we should have to listen to him. So therefore they represent when a person just denies Hashem completely. The Rosh gives a different point. He says that again, the people in the time of the people of Mabel, each one of these groups did not follow their word. The Dora Mabel, people would promise one another to do something, and they wouldn't follow through. And the Mitzriim also the Mitzriim kept on saying we'll send the Jewish people free, and they didn't end up doing that. The Meiri adds also when it comes to each one of them, they acted in a way where a human bastion is not able to do something about them. For example, the Dora Mabel would steal one chip of wood from a fence or one bean that a person had in front of him to sell, and eventually the whole thing is gone. But they're each taking less than a shava prota. Reb Shimon finishes off the Mishnah and says, now you Tanakama are saying that until Meshicha or some form of Kinyan is done, then either side can change their mind. Reb Shimon says, no. Whoever has the money in his hands has the upper hand. So Reb Shimon is saying the seller has everything in his hand because he has the commodity. He also has the money at this point because the Lekeach has given him the money and not yet done the Meshicha. Therefore, Reb Shimon says at this point, only the Moicher can change his mind, not the Lekeach, as we'll see eventually in the Gemara why he says that. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Masnile Rebbe le Reb Shimon Brei. When Rebbe was teaching this Mishnah to his son Reb Shimon, he taught him, as we have it, has Zahav Koinas HaKesef, that the gold acquires the silver, because again, the idea is the gold is considered the peiros and the silver is considered the money. Omale, so Reb Shimon asks him, Rebbe, Shanisalonu b'yalvusecha, when you were younger, you taught us the other way around, HaKesef Koinas HaZahav, that the silver acquires the gold. The other way around, that we would consider the silver to be the peiros and the gold to be the money. Now in your old age, when you're older, you're teaching us the other way around. Azahav koneh hakesef, that it's the gold acquires the silver rather than the other way around. So what's going on over here? Why are you changing your mind? So that's the Maharshal explains, in fact, that what he means to say by that, Reb Shimon is asking, is it that you actually changed your mind, or is it that just you forgot what you said before? Now, Rebbe did not answer. Therefore, the Gemara continues, let's not assume that Rebbe forgot. Let's assume Rebbe had a reason to change his mind. Well, then we have to ask, Me'ikra, b'yalduse ma'isavar, v'ziknuse ma'isavar. So what was his svara each time? Again, when Reb Shimon, according to Maharshal, when Reb Shimon is asking Rebbe, it means he's saying that I don't know if you forgot or you changed your mind. Now, since Rebbe did not answer, presumably it doesn't mean he forgot. Otherwise, he would have said so. So it must mean there's a svara involved. Well, what is that svara? So the answer is b'yalduse svara. When Rebbe was younger, he figured dava d'choshiv, because gold is more important; it's more valuable. Therefore, have a tiva. Therefore, we should consider that the money. The Kasper de Lechoshiv, silver, which is less valuable, have a Pera, would be considered the Peris. The Koni Le Pera Lativa. So therefore, as usual, the Kinyan of the Peris accomplishes the Kinyan of the money. And therefore, when he was younger, he figured out Kesef Koines HaZahav. The Ziknuse Sovar, when Rebbe got older, he realized it doesn't depend on the respective value of the metals. It depends on how easily they circulate. Kasper de Choris, silver, which circulates more readily, it's over la socher, have a tiva, that's considered the money, David lechorif, as opposed to gold, is not quite so, is not so easy to circulate, because not everybody has change for it, for example. Therefore, have a pera, therefore it becomes peris, becoming like pera la tiva, and again, therefore, this the gold, which is the peris, is acquiring the silver, which is the money. So that's why he did that way. It's interesting that actually the Yerushalmi, the version of the Mishnah that's in the Yerushalmi, actually Taka has it according to Rebbe's original version that the silver is the Paris and the gold is considered the money. And in fact, the version of the Mishnah in the Yerushalmi actually begins Hakesef Kones Hazahav. And since also you have a perek in Mishnayos and Gemara is usually named after its first word, so therefore our perek here in the Bavli we call it Perek Hazahav. In the Yerushalmi, the parallel perek is called Hakesef. There's a sicha in Chelek Vav where the Rebbe talks about the deeper meaning behind all of this, that the gold, he explains that gold represents the avodah of tzaddikim, and silver represents the avodah of Bali Tshuva. So the tzaddikim, their avodah is a more constant kind of thing. It never has its ups and downs. Therefore, it can be compared more to he says the avodah of tzaddikim is like silver, and a Bali Tshuva is like gold. So the avodah of tzaddikim is constant. Therefore, it's more like chorif. It circulates more readily. It's always available, as opposed to the avodah of Bali Tshuva fluctuates. On the other hand, the avodah of Bali Tshuva is much more precious. So therefore, we can say that it's more valuable, and therefore we can talk about the value of it relative to silver. And relative to gold, and we can relative to silver, and we can focus on that. So it's two different approaches of looking at whether we consider the silver, the value of gold to outweigh the fact that silver circulates more readily, or whether we don't. The Rebbe doesn't explain over there, but maybe that explains also. He does point out over there that we talk about that silver represents chesed and gold represents gvura. And since there are other places where it talks about that the Yerushalmi is more associated with a way of learning of chesed and the Bavli more with gvura, that could explain why we have these different versions in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi respectively. Anyway, Omer Ravashi, ki yalduse mistamla. So Rav Ashi says, actually, the version that Rebbe had when he was younger, that the silver is considered the commodity, and the gold is considered the coin. Mistabra, it seems more logical to follow that, which would mean that in our Mishnah, it should be a kesef kones azav. Now, obviously, Rav Ashi eventually must have changed his mind, since our Gemara has it kones of kesef. But Rav Ashi is saying that actually there seems to be a logic. There seems to be more of a logic to Rebbe's original version. Midikatoni, because the Mishnah continues, and a choshes kones of kesef, that the copper acquires the silver. So Rav Ashi points out, iyamet b'shleima kasper gabedava peirahavi. If you're going to tell me that silver relative to gold is considered peiris. Because again, the copper. Because again, the gold is more valuable. That's why the Mishnah needs to tell us that copper coins acquire silver. Meaning, we need to be told that afa gabdul gabe dava peirahavi. It is true. It is true that relative to gold, silver is considered only peiris because gold is more expensive. Lagabe nechoshes tevahavi. We need to be informed that when it comes to copper, since silver is more valuable than copper, then therefore it's considered kesef, and therefore again that the nechoshes is going to require it. Eli amit kasper gabi dab tirahabi. But if you're going to tell me that silver is considered money relative to gold, because we don't look at their respective values, we look at how easily they circulate, well then there's no reason to mention the case of the copper. Hashtel gabi dab dechoshe minei. If you're telling me that silver relative to gold, even though gold has the advantage of being more important, nevertheless we say tivahavi, that the silver is considered coinage because it circulates more readily. When it comes to relative to copper, where silver has a double advantage over copper, it circulates, it's more valuable, and it circulates more easily. Miboya, would the Mishnah need to tell us that? Would the Mishnah need to tell us that it's considered the coins relative to copper? Obviously not. So therefore, that gives good reason to say that like Rebbe's original version, that it's the silver that's considered the commodity, and it's the gold that's considered the coinage. And therefore, now the Mishnah goes on to say, on the other hand, you should know there is a case where silver will be considered the coinage, namely relative to copper. Well, the Gemara says not necessarily. because it's Zrich. After all, you could say the Mishnah still had to tell us the Chiddush that it's that silver is considered coinage relative to copper. You're going to say, what's the Chiddush if it has a double? If it has a double advantage, Sakudat Chamina. Otherwise, you would think Hani Priti. Because when it comes to prutis, when it comes to copper prutis, but Asra de Sagi, in those places where they do circulate, inu charifi tve, they do in fact, they are inu charifi tve mikaspa, they do in fact circulate more readily than silver. It's true they don't use copper coinage in all places, but where they do use it, it is often used, it is often used more regularly than silver. So therefore, you could argue, obviously, you could argue, at least in such places, copper should be considered coinage rather than the commodity. Hamash Malan, therefore, the Mishnah would have to tell us, since there are places where copper coins don't circulate at all, or at least are not over the circle, they don't circulate so readily, then therefore it's considered only payers. So you could say, in other words, it's not So it's not a matter of that that we say we do have to consider which one circulates more readily. But the fact is, there are different places when it comes to copper. Some places where it circulates more and some less, and therefore the Mishnah needs to tell us across the board. So no proof from that as far as Rebbe's original version versus his later version. So there are various explanations from Rishonim about different details within this. The bottom line is the Gemara so far has concluded that we have good reason to support Rebbe's later version. And again, the Bavli, in fact, as opposed to the Yerushalmi, does in fact have that version. You could say we showed him point out according to Rebbe's original version, it's true we could have learned that it's a Kavah Chomer if according to Rebbe's original version Kesef is considered even though Kesef is considered coinage relative to copper, and we could have learned that from a Kavah Chomer, but still you could say the Mishnah would have reason to do that, because the Mishnah wants to tell us sometimes silver can be a commodity, sometimes it can be coinage. So therefore, it can still work to have the Mishnah say it that way. The Gemara was wondering that according to Rebbe's second version, why would we need to say that if we already were told that? And the point is this point about that copper itself doesn't always circulate so readily. There are different places, and therefore the Mishnah needs to tell us that across the board, the copper is considered the payers. The Gemara continues. Rav Chia also holds that gold is considered the coinage, and therefore he would hold like Rebbe's original version, a kesef koines azahav. And we know that as follows: the Rav Oisif Dinere Mibrate de Rav Chia. Rav one time borrowed gold coins from Rav Chia's daughter. Rav Chia was Rav's uncle. So Rav Chia's daughter, therefore, was Rav's cousin. So he borrowed gold coins from her. Yaku Dinri, later on, the value of gold coins went up relative to silver. Also, so Rav came to Rav Chia to ask, is there a problem of ribis over here? Now, we're going to learn in the next parak, we're going to talk in great detail about the dinim of ribis. You have a concept called saw b'saw, that if you borrow a saw of wheat, and then the price goes up, you can't necessarily return a saw of wheat, because then there would be an issue of ribis. When you borrowed that saw, it was worth $10, and when you're returning it, it's worth $15, and that would be a problem of ribis. So here, Rav wants to know. Now, on the other hand, with coins, we don't say that. With money, we don't say that, because in halacha, we consider the value of money to be fixed and the value of commodities to vary in accordance with the money. In modern economics, you don't necessarily say that way. You would say, for example, that the value of the dollar going down over time. In halacha, we would say rather the value of the dollar remains constant, but how much that dollar can buy goes up and down. So now Rav wants to know, basically, are these gold coins they borrowed from his cousin, Are they considered peiros or are they considered money? Omale, and Rabbi Chiya answers him, Zil shalom la tovin of tekilin. Go pay her back good and full rate point. Now, Yamit b'shlema dava tiva havi, if you tell me according to Rabbi Chiya that gold is considered the matbeya, is considered the coin shaper, well then fine, because then there's no problem of ribis, because he borrowed X number of gold coins, he's paying back exactly the same number, they're worth more, that doesn't matter. Eli Yamit peira havi, but if you tell me that Rabbi Chiya would hold, like Rebbe's second version, that gold is considered the peiros, how would that work? Havalei saw b'sa, then you have a problem of borrowing a saw against a saw, v'osir, and then it would be osir. So that shows that Rabbi Chiya holds that the gold must be the machbeah. But the Gemara says not necessarily. Rav dinrei havalei, because actually Rav already had gold dinarim available to him when he borrowed. The reason he borrowed is because they weren't available to him just at that moment. But he had. He actually had gold coins. He just wasn't able to get to them right now. So therefore, nasa ka'oy malah. So therefore, it's the equivalent of telling her, halveni ad sheyaveh bni, lend me some money, lend me money or produce until my son comes. Ad sheem samafteach, or until I find the key. So then, in that case, there's no issue of saw b'saw with that. We're going to learn in the next perek that this whole issue of saw b'saw only comes in if you have a couple of exceptions to that rule, and one of them is yesh loy. If you actually have some of that commodity available, then we don't say the halacha of that you're also to borrow a saw b'saw, because in effect, we say that you could have paid it back at that time. So here, the same way, since Rav really had gold dinarim available, he just didn't, he couldn't get to them at the moment, then therefore there's no problem of saw b'saw. So even so Rav Chiya can hold that gold is in fact considered a commodity, but because Rav had available to him, it's called yesh loy, then therefore there's no problem of saw b'saw. Now Tosfos points out in that case, then what was Rav asking in the first place is because at the end of the next parak, after we go through all the dinim of ribis, we're gonna learn over there that Hillel, that here we have one of the rare examples where Hillel himself says an opinion in halacha as opposed to base Hillel, and Hillel says over there that this exception of yesh loy and this exception of halveni and shiyove bni doesn't apply. So Rav wanted to know whether the halacha is like Hillel or not. The Gemara continues, Omar Rava, Hai Tana Sova Dava Tivahav. The following Tana of the following Braisa holds like Rebbe's original version that gold is considered the Makbeah. The Tanya, we learn a Braisa, Pruta Sha'amru, when the Chachamim talk about a Pruta, as far as various dinim, for example, that Kedushin requires a Pruta or different other dinim later on in the parak. Actually, we're going to learn that there's a number of dinim where a pruta is considered the minimum for various things in halacha. So the definition of a pruta, echad mishmona be'isser ha'itau, it's 1/8 of an Italian isser, which we learned about that in kedushin. L'may naftamina, why is that important for us to know? The reason is the kedusha isha for kedushin. You have a machlokas b'shamay b'shilul at the beginning of kedushin, where the kedushin requires a dinner according to b'shamay or a pruta according to b'shilul. The halacha is like b'shilul. A pruta is enough, so we need to know how much a pruta is. So we should know it's 1/8 of an Italian isser. In turn, isser echad me'eser ma'abab a dinner shal kesef. An isser is 1/24 of a silver dinner. L'may nafkimina l'mekach hamemker. That's relevant as far as buying and selling. If two people want to exchange, one has silver dinarim and the other one has isarim, then we should know the rate of exchange is 1/24. Then the Braisa continues, dinar shel kesef echad me'esrim v'chamisha b'dinar shel zahav. In turn, a silver dinner is 1/25 of a gold dinner. L'may nafkimina, what's the relevance of that? L'pidyan aben. That's relevant to know as far as pidyon aben, that since a shekel in the Torah, which is the equivalent of a sela of the times of the Chachamim, is 4 dinarim, so the 5 sloyim of the Torah would be 20 dinarim. So now, if the father gives the kohen a gold dinar, which constitutes 25 silver dinarim, then the kohen would have to give him as change 5 silver dinarim. Tosfos points out a couple of other possibilities over here as well. Lameka Homemker can also mean for example, Tosfos says, what if somebody sold something where the price was 24 Isserim, and later on, now the value of Isserim goes down relative to Dinarim, and now you have, say, 32 Isserim in a dinner. You can't say, well, look, I only have to pay you 24 Isser, and it's the dinner that went up. No, you have to say that he has to give him the full 32 Isser or a silver dinner, because we go according to what the dinner was worth at a time. Tosfos also mentions, by the way, an interesting point that in near times, and this is how it was in the times of the Gemara as well, the rate of exchange between a certain amount of silver and a certain amount of gold was really 1 in 12. So where are we getting 1 in 25 over here for silver versus gold? Tosfos points out that actually the gold dinarim were not only more valuable in that they were made of a more valuable metal, but they were also heavier than thicker than the silver dinarim, twice as thick. So therefore you have twice as much metal in a gold dinner as you do in a silver dinner. And then since the rate of exchange was 1 to 12 or 1 to 12 and a half, then therefore that brings you to your exchange rate that we're saying over here in the Gemara of 1 to 25. Anyway, so Rava says, If you tell me that gold is considered the matbeya for purposes of these halachas, then we can understand where, when it comes to the last part, where the Tana is saying the amount for pidyon haben is X amount relative to a gold dinner, then fine, you can say mashar Tana, but midi dekits, then the Tana is evaluating based on something that has a fixed value. So the Tana is a Tana, the Braisa is saying silver, which is considered the commodity, fluctuates relative to gold, but however it is, it's always going to be the amount of silver you give to the Kohen is going to be 4/5 of a gold dinner. Eli, I'm a Peira, Avi, but if you tell me the gold itself is considered Peiris, Meshair Tanim Amidi de Oikar Vazil, how could Tanya give us a figure relative to gold, which is going to fluctuate in value relative to silver? So wouldn't that show, therefore, that the gold must be considered the Matbeya and everything else is valued relative to that? So that would prove like Rebbe's original opinion. Rishonim point out actually the fact is the Psukim in the Torah mentions silver, the Erkach HaMeshes Shkolim, the Shekel HaKodesh, where Shekel is made out of silver, but they're explaining, in other words, that the point is that it's obviously the Torah is going to be giving us a fixed value. And again, if we're gonna say that gold always stays of constant value and silver value and silver varies, then it's going to be that at the time of when the Torah was given, and generally that's how it was in the time of the Gemara, it would usually be 4/5 of a gold dinner. But that shows, in other words, that the gold is the standard of value against which everything else goes. So the answer is not the answer. The Gemara continues, because after all, if you're going to say in that case that the silver is going to be the fixed standard of value, then you can't necessarily say that the Kohen is always going to give him back 5 silver dinarim. Zimnin de mahadale kahana. Sometimes the Kohen may have to give him a larger amount of change. And then there are going to be other times when the father is going to have to give more to the Kohen, because it's going to depend. If we're going to say that if the Braisa is telling us that you should know a silver dinner is always 1/25 of a gold dinner, and you're going to say the gold itself actually varies in value, you can't necessarily say as a blanket statement that if he gives him a gold dinner, he's always going to get 5 silver dinarim and change. It's going to depend. El shma mina tiva avi. That would show that gold must be considered the matbeya. So shma mina. Okay, so you can prove that the Tana of that Braisa holds like Rebbe's original version that gold is considered the matbeya. That doesn't necessarily show the halacha is like that. And in fact, most Rishonim say the halacha is in fact like Rebbe's later version that gold is considered to be the commodity rather than the coinage. So now the Gemara is going to start on a discussion of how this relates to the dinim of pidyon ma'isa sheni. That we know the Torah tells us that if you have ma'isa sheni and you can't take it all to your shalayim because you have too much of it, then you exchange it for coins, and you take the coins to your shalayim. The coins themselves, sometimes you may have to exchange. So now the Gemara is going to start dealing with that matter. Throughout this perek, actually, we're going to be bringing up this matter of pinyan ma'aseh sheni a number of times because it directly relates to all these matters of meshicha and of how one thing acquires another and so forth. So the Mishnah says, Tnanhos, and we learn in Masechta ma'aseh sheni, Beshamai says that a person who has sloyim of silver that he exchanged ma'aseh sheni for, he's not allowed to in turn transfer the kedusha from those silver coins onto gold dinar. Which would make it easier for him, because again, gold it takes up less volume. Gold dinar, since there are 25 silver dinar to a gold dinar, and we said the volume of a gold dinar is only twice that of a silver dinar, so therefore it would be more efficient for him to be able to do that. But Bishamai says you can't do that. But Bishilu Matir and Bishilu says you could. Now, Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish argue about why Bishamai and Bishilu hold their respective opinions and what they would say. One says the machlokas is davka when he wants to be machalo the silver coins onto gold dinar. The Beshamai sabri kaspa tiva v'dava peira. Beshamai holds like our Mishnah, the silver is considered to be the money, the gold is considered the peiras. The tiva peira loy machalin. And when it comes to ma'aseh sheni, we can exchange fruit. Produce of ma'aseh sheni for money, but not the other way around. You can't take money of ma'aseh sheni and exchange it for fruit. Well, since in effect over here the gold is considered fruit, as we've just established, then therefore Bishamai is going to say that you can't do that, because that would amount to exchanging something that you have already as money, the silver, and exchanging it for produce, which is like the gold. Or Basil Sabri Kasla paid of a dip adavativa, whereas Basil would hold the other way around, like Rebbe held in his younger years. Basila would hold kaspa peira v'dava tiva. The silver is considered the peiras, the gold is considered the coins, or peira tiva machalolinen, and no problem, you can be machalo peiras on money, therefore you can be machalo the silver on the gold. But according to this opinion, avo peiras al dinarin, but if to begin with you wanted to take the peiras and be machalo them on gold coins, according to that opinion, divrei hakol machalolinen, everybody would agree that you could. Even Beis Shammai holds that gold, fine, they hold that gold is considered peiras relative to silver, but they hold that it is considered money relative to anything else. So my timer, why would they allow that needed to have our kesef for Beis Hillel? Because it's similar to the way Beis Hillel is allowing you to be machalo on silver. In Beis Hillel's opinion, we're saying Beis Hillel holds that the silver is considered payrus. And yet, according to Beis Hillel, surely you can be machalo fruit of ma'aseh sheni on silver coins, because they would say relative to gold, they would say that silver is considered payrus. But relative to payrus, silver is surely considered money rather than another kind of payrus. So in other words, it's not a matter of exchanging payrus for payrus. It would be a matter of you exchanging payrus for coins, and that's fine. Zohav Nami, the Beis Shammai, then according to that, Beis Shammai would take a similar view. It is true that gold sometimes is considered payrus relative to silver, but when it comes to actual fruit, it's considered coinage, so therefore you can be mechal on it. So according to that opinion, Beis Shammai would say it's fine to be mechal the ma'aseh sheni directly on gold. The question is, once you are mechal on silver, can you then go and transfer the kedusha from that silver onto gold? According to that opinion, Beis Shammai would say that you couldn't do that. Rishonim discuss a point over here that Rashi is saying over here that even we're talking according to this opinion to exchange silver for gold, since the gold is considered payrus, would be also minatora. On the other hand, that's a point of Rashi. According to the Ritva, no, it's minatora. It would only be to use actual fruit, because the whole point is the Torah wants to make it easier for you to get to your shalayim. And if you have a big volume of fruit, you're not going to be able to do that. But minatora would have been fine to do silver on gold, even according to Beis Shammai. And it's only midrabanan that we would be saying, because when you have gold, which according to this opinion is considered peiros, if you're allowed to be mechalal on that, you might come to be mechalal on fruit, which isn't going to work. So according to that opinion, in short, according to Beis Shammai, we'd say that gold is not always considered peiros. It really depends. Relative to silver, it is, but relative to peiros, it's not. Now that's one opinion. The other opinion says between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, after Peiros al Dinan Machloikas, no, the Machloikas would actually be even when it comes to exchanging the coins directly for gold, or exchanging the fruit directly for gold dinarim, that Beis Shammai would not allow. Because Beis Shammai would say that the gold is considered Peiros, and you can't be Machal Peiros on Peiros. So the Gemara says, in that case, Lamanda Omer, after Peiros al Dinarim Machloikas. Well, according to that opinion, that you have that Machloikas, even when it's Peiros on Dinarim, then Adam Miflagi was slowing on Dinarim. Why indeed are they only arguing in the Mishnah about silver coins on gold, Liflag with Peiros al Dinarim? Why according to that opinion, is the Machloikas not presented as far as can you be Machal or Maisa Sheni directly on gold? And the answer is Iflug Bepeiros al Dinarim, because if the Mishnah presented the Machlokas only in that way, Hava Amina, then you would think Hani Mili Bepeiros al Dinarim. You know why this Hillel says that you can do it, because you're doing directly on gold coins, and after all, gold coins are considered coinage, they're considered Makbeya in some cases. But when it comes to silver and gold, maybe Bishilo would agree with Bishama the Gabi Kaspa Peirahavi. Maybe they would agree that gold is considered Peiros relative to silver, and that you can't be Machalo. Kamash Malan, therefore the Mishnah has to tell us that no, this hill will hold that even in that case, even as far as silver on gold, we're going to allow it. It doesn't matter that much for us to be aware that according to that opinion, Beis Shammai would say that we're not even going to allow Peiros on Dinarim, because the halacha is not like Beis Shammai anyway. It's more important for us to clarify Beis Hillel's opinion. So we'll continue. So the next daf, then the Gemara continues with discussing. Now we said we have a machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. We didn't say which one said which. So we have to establish. We have to figure out which one says which understanding of Beis Shammai versus Beis Hillel. The Gemara will often do that. Often it brings a machlokas and says chad omer this and chad omer that, and then the Gemara will try to establish which one actually said one and which one actually said the other. Shukriya, everyone.